Right now, I'm very happy to introduce to you our next guest, which is Alka Pradhan. She was counseled to the Constitution Project's Bipartisan Task Force on Detainee Treatment throughout their two-year investigation, and they just released their findings of that investigation last week. Alka, thank you so much for making time to come on the air tonight.
Of course. Thank you for having me.
You know, it was unfortunate, horrible on its own, of course, that the nation was focused on the tragic bombing that killed three people and injured close to 200 in Boston mm-hmm. last week. But what occurred, of course, I think your important report, it was eclipsed in a lot of ways by the reporting on the Boston bombing. And I'm glad you're here tonight to talk about what these findings are, this bipartisan panel that you are part of. But maybe you can speak to us tonight as we get started here about the Constitution Project and the task force you worked on detainee treatment.
Absolutely. First, of course, I want to say that as excited as we were to release our report, of course, our thoughts and our prayers were with the victims of the Boston bombing on that day and that entire week, really, and they still are. But what we released on April 16th was a large bipartisan report on detainee treatment, and it was the task force on detainee treatment was convened by an NGO here in Washington called the Constitution Project. And the Constitution Project has focused on bipartisan approach to some very complicated issues in the past 10 or 15 years of its existence. It deals with gun control, it deals with constitutional issues, voters' rights, really a broad swath of issues. And 2 years ago, in almost 2.5 years now, in December of 2010, the Constitution Project convened the task force, which is a group of an 11-member group of very high-profile individuals. Our co-chairs were Asa Hutchinson, who's a former Undersecretary for Homeland Security, and James Jones, who is a former U.S. ambassador. In addition to many others, the former director of the FBI, Bill Sessions, Ambassador Tom Pickering, who just ran the Libya inquiry, which of course everyone heard about, and several others. And the reason that they convened this task force was because it became apparent after President Obama came into office that there was not going to be any sort of administration investigation or congressional investigation into what really occurred in our detention practices and policies since September 11th. We knew that there was an enormous amount of public source information that reports that had been done by NGOs, reports that had been released by the government, government memoranda, and foreign information, but none of that had ever been put together. And in addition, we believed that there was a great deal of information to be found by interviewing some of the officials and the individuals and the former detainees who were part of the program. So that was the idea behind the task force's work. And the task force then, has really spent the past 2.5 years working on the investigation and the writing of this report, and it was just released on the 16th.
Thank you for that, Alka. I wanted you to maybe lay out for us the definition of torture, because that certainly came up for a lot of debate in our nation following some of the revelations of what was taking place at Abu Ghraib and Guantanamo Naval Base there and Bagram Air Force Base in Afghanistan. Cruel, inhuman, and degrading treatment is a phrase often put into these U.S. law as well as international treaties. Maybe you could talk about the operational definition that you were using with this task force to come to the conclusion that the U.S. indeed had engaged in torture.
Sure. I mean, what we primarily looked to in defining torture is Of course, the United Nations Convention Against Torture, which the United States helped draft, which we ratified in the 1980s, which we've really been a leader on. And the full definition of torture in the convention is any act by which severe pain or suffering, whether physical or mental, is intentionally inflicted on a person for such purposes as obtaining from him or a third person information or a confession. That's the primary definition. There are secondary definitions that include punishing them for acts that they've committed or any reason based on discrimination. So that's the definition of torture under the convention. Now, acts falling short of that are considered cruel, inhuman, and degrading treatment. And we certainly understand, and the task force noted this, that when you're looking at specific acts, it is very difficult to perhaps identify what constitutes cruel, inhuman, and degrading treatment. There's some ambiguity built into that. And so in working on this report, what we did is the task force looked at the definition provided by the convention, which is legally binding upon the United States and has been incorporated into the domestic torture statutes that we have here in the United States and the war crime statute. And we looked at the specific techniques that were used by U.S. personnel in the theaters of war abroad and by the CIA in the secret prisons abroad, in addition to Guantanamo Bay. And it was very important for the task force to understand not only why there were assertions for torture, but really look at it themselves in context. So, for instance, when you look at some of the techniques that were approved for use on detainees as so-called enhanced interrogation techniques, one of them was a sleep deprivation technique. And it's very easy for officials to look back and say, well, sleep deprivation, you know, I got 3 hours of sleep last night, and that's sleep deprivation, so I don't consider myself to be tortured. There's a famous memo that that approved certain techniques for use of Guantanamo Bay that identified standing for long periods of time as a stress position to be used on detainees. And Secretary of Defense Rumsfeld handwrote a note saying, I stand for 12 hours a day. Why is this considered a stress position? And, you know, the answer to that is you can't just look at that in a vacuum. You have to look at how it was used in combination with what methods, because these were almost always used in combination, for how long, and whether it may have gotten out of hand. Now, the sleep deprivation, for example, was used by the CIA on certain detainees in freezing temperatures for days at a time, up to a week at a time, while the detainee was shackled with his hands behind his back and in adult diapers, because allowing him to use the restroom was considered to interfere with use of the technique. So that, for instance, the task force found was clearly torture.
Thanks for that, Alka. I, along with many people in our audience, I'm sure, remember pretty clearly, and it was kind of brought home with the opening of President George W. Bush's library in Texas last week, the legacy of his administration. And your panel that investigated torture in the post-9/11 era was bipartisan. You had Democrats, Republicans, you had people who were been in the military, as you said, and an array of folks, constitutional experts and lawyers such as yourself. What I found very disturbing, and of course it's really a central issue that your task force confronted, and that was in the wake of the revelation of these torture techniques practiced by U.S. officials and authorized from up above, there are many politicians in this country, and still politicians, who embrace torture and say, you know, in a crisis like this, we have to take extraordinary measures to ensure public security and safety. And there's the old saying by Ben Franklin that said, those who would trade away their civil liberties for security deserve neither. But there are a lot of people in this country that promote the idea of torture and violation of international law to protect our homeland. And I'm wondering how you react to that, because those people are still out there. And among them is, of course, Vice President Dick Cheney, who continues to, at every opportunity, talk about how successful torture has been for our fight against terrorism.
Absolutely. And you know, we have several responses to that the task force really lays out in great detail in this report. We would first say, in response to really the handful of former officials that insist that these techniques, they call them enhanced interrogation techniques, the task force calls them torture, that these techniques work. You know, the response to that is really, first of all, these officials that are asserting that are the ones that have the most to gain from asserting that, because they were the ones that authorized it. So they really have a vested interest in pushing this notion that these techniques work. Now, what the task force found in this 2.5-year study of all of the information that's publicly available on this, and there is a great deal of it, is that these techniques, there's simply no reason to believe that these techniques do produce, have produced useful information. And they looked at specific circumstances that those handful of officials have claimed led to useful information, such as the interrogation of individuals they claim led to the capture of Osama bin Laden, and we go through this in the report. Simply, if you look at the names and the dates and who was interrogated when, the trail just does not add up. And that was what the task force was able to conclude from what we could, from what public information we could use. We would also point those individuals who would like to believe that these techniques work to the conclusions of the Senate Select Intelligence Committee. Now, they just concluded a similar report, similar in the sense that it looks specifically at the use of these techniques by the CIA, and it looks at all the classified information that we did not have access to. And the details of that report are still classified, but Senators Feinstein and McCain and others have said that their conclusions were very similar to the task force's, in that they found that there was no reason to believe that this that these techniques led to useful information. And keeping in mind that they had access to all of the classified files on this, so they had full access to everything that we did and everything that the CIA obtained from use of those techniques. Now, when the Bush Library opened a few days ago, I understand that there was a video shown of former Secretary Rice defending the use of those techniques, and the task force did actually release a statement saying that restating the conclusion that these techniques simply do not result in useful information. And the advice that those techniques are lawful and do result in useful information has since been repudiated by legal scholars and by various government agencies. So those are a few of the responses. And finally, we need to remember that torture is not a tool to be used. Torture is a heinous crime under domestic law and under international law. It is simply not a tool that the United States should use, should ever consider using, and it doesn't represent values that the United States stands for.
I'm glad you stated it that way, because aside from its illegality and its mm-hmm. contravening all these treaties and everything else, it is a matter of values and ethics and principles mm-hmm. That in some ways are more important. And Alka, I wanted to reintroduce you. We're speaking with Alka Pradhan. She is counsel to the Constitution Project's Bipartisan Task Force on Detainee Treatment. Throughout their 2-year investigation, they released their report last week. One other very important issue that a lot of people are concerned about through the years of the revelations of U.S. Torture of our detainees in the post-9/11 era is accountability for those who ordered these illegal activities. What is it that your report has stated about your views on accountability? When President Obama came into office, he famously said we want to look forward and not backward, and therefore accountability seemed to be, and in actuality, has been off the table. Any of these former officials in the George W. Bush administration have not, for the most part, been held to account.
Well, you know, there are many forms of accountability, Scott, and the task force, you know, as a preliminary matter, the task force did not approach this as a group of prosecutors. You know, as we stated, we didn't have access to all of the classified information. We certainly didn't have subpoena power. We don't have access to grand jury testimony, so it would not have been, you know, it wouldn't have been legally accurate or legally sufficient for the task force to approach this as prosecutors. But in terms of accountability, you know, certainly the task force found that, you know, the highest officials in the Bush administration were held at least moral responsibility and ethical responsibility for the imposition of these techniques, of these torture and cruel and human degrading treatment techniques on detainees in theaters of war abroad. And there is a very real concern that there has been no accountability, no calling to account, no investigation even into what occurred. The Convention Against Torture and many other conventions legally obligate us to at least investigate fully any allegations of torture or cruel and human degrading treatment, and that has not occurred. What has occurred are certain indictments or investigations abroad that we detail in the report, indictments of former officials, indictments of military, indictments of CIA officials, and we also look at the fact that the United States, unfortunately, has, in many cases, done its best to stifle those investigations. And so there's not only a concern that we are not looking at this at home, but there's a very real concern that we are preventing other countries from doing so, including many of our former allies or current allies who are under fire abroad for participating in this program.
And Alka, of those investigations and indictments that have occurred abroad, are any of them of consequence that you could note here? And I've heard, although I haven't been able to confirm this, but I've heard that some former Bush administration officials are wary or have avoided traveling abroad for fear that they may be served with a subpoena or an arrest warrant in some of these countries where these investigations or indictments have taken place.
That's absolutely true, Scott, and we detail this actually in one of our chapters. I believe it's chapter 8 or 9, the effects and consequences of U.S. policies, where we talk about all of the legal and political consequences of the detention program. It's certainly true that there have been indictments issued abroad of former President Bush, of Vice President Cheney, Secretary Rumsfeld. There was an incident where a group was considering filing an indictment, I believe, in Canada when President Bush was about to travel to Canada. There was another incident. I believe there were incidents in Germany and in Switzerland, I believe, where President Bush or Vice President Cheney were about to travel there, and they reconsidered their trips there or canceled their trips to those places because those indictments or investigations were pending there. And there was a concern that, you know, that they may be subject to legal process abroad. Certainly the most famous case so far is the one that is still, I believe, ongoing in Italy, where 20-some former or current CIA officials have been convicted in absentia for their involvement in the extraordinary rendition of a Muslim cleric, mistakenly, it turned out, but he was rendered to a third country, and he was brutally tortured from Italy, and they have been convicted in absentia. And, you know, the very real consequence of that is that's one country now where those CIA operatives cannot operate in safety. They can no longer travel abroad or to places where they may be arrested for that, to fulfill that conviction. So that's, you know, just one of the many real legal and political consequences of what we've done.
Alka Pradhan, can you describe some of the dangerous territory or the dangerous consequences, rather, of the U.S. engaging in torture officially as we had in the post-9/11 era when it comes to setting a precedent internationally in terms of our own military personnel being captured or held prisoner or detained abroad? What tangibly is the negative blowback from this whole policy?
Well, you know, I would say, again, we talk about this in detail in our consequences chapter, and I would say there are three major aspects to it. The first, of course, is that the U.S. military, the primary reason that the U.S. military does not want to engage in torture practices, and we lay out in full detail the fact that the heads of the military opposed the use of these techniques, pretty much throughout all of this. The reason is very practical, because they do not want their forces exposed to the same kind of techniques from other opposing forces. So that's one reason. Another thing that we found through the course of the investigation is that a large, significant number of U.S. personnel from imposing these techniques have suffered consequences, including post-traumatic stress disorder and other mental traumas that they're now trying to deal with. And we interviewed several of them, and we took their accounts down. And the third is that when we engage in these practices abroad, not only do U.S. personnel open themselves up to the same retribution, if you will, but you open yourself up to the possibility that even allies who want to work with us will hold back in certain ways because they're afraid of this treatment that they do not themselves want to engage in. For instance, we talk in one of the chapters about the fact that, and this was an anecdote from Alberto Mora, who is the former general counsel of the Navy, the fact that certain of our allies in Afghanistan did not want to hand over not suspected terrorists, confirmed members of Al-Qaeda to U.S. forces because they were afraid of what the U.S. forces would do to them, and that would open them up to legal processes in terms of aiding and abetting acts of torture. So they actually would let people go rather than handing them over to U.S. forces. That's clearly a dangerous consequence of using these techniques, aside from the fact that they simply don't work and they're completely illegal.
Well, Alka, we're running out of time. And lastly, I wanted to make sure to ask you this. In your report, you conclude by recommending several policy changes here in the United States. Can you summarize them?
Absolutely. There are several very important ones. One of the important ones is, for instance, the declassification of the Senate Select Intelligence Committee report and general declassification of many of the reports and opinions that have been conducted by the government, by the Bush administration, and perhaps by the Obama administration on this topic, because the American public deserves to know what was done in their name, especially 10, 11, 12 years on. That's one of the important ones. Then there are a whole host of recommendations on what the United States needs to do in a concert with its allies in terms of obtaining diplomatic assurances or use of diplomatic assurances for suspects who we want to send abroad or former detainees who we want to release abroad, who were concerned maybe tortured abroad, in terms of how we should release detainees abroad with a certain set of regulations as to how they're going to be reintroduced into society to combat recidivism, in terms of how we should calculate recidivism, because the task force found many problems with how those numbers are currently being calculated, So those recommendations really cover a wide swath of topics. This really is, if I may say so, the task force report is the most holistic look at detainee treatment to date, and I would really urge everyone to look at it and read as much of it as possible.
Well, thanks, Alka. And I'll just note here as we conclude, although President Obama is credited with, you know, ending a torture policy, and I think maybe the Bush administration was moving towards that in their final years in office, the fact is we still have detainees, many of them currently in a hunger strike at the Guantanamo Naval Base. And there are many people who have been assigned for release by several government agencies who've looked at their the alleged cases against them and found that they can be released. But the government yet has not acted on that recommendation. And you have other prisoners, and I'm sorry we don't have more time, but there are other prisoners who did undergo torture that the U.S. Mm-hmm. believes it cannot bring a legal case against because of that torture, but mm-hmm. they feel these individuals are too dangerous to release. So these people are in a legal limbo. They can't be tried, and in the view of the people in charge, can't be released. And certainly in that kind of situation, it's another form of torture.
Absolutely, and with the unanimous conclusion or finding, really, of the task force was that those individuals who have been cleared for release should be cleared should be released as expeditiously as possible. And there, we set out several recommendations for how President Obama can do that, including reevaluating the ban on sending back to Yemen, and in addition to asking Congress to ease the transfer restrictions that are really baseless at this point, and also reevaluating that what you just described, the issue of the detainees who have been judged too dangerous to release, but we're not going to bring suits against them. We don't know what that determination is based on, that they're too dangerous to release. All we know is that they will not be released, but we're also not going to try them, which is a violation of international law and, frankly, a violation of our due process principles.
Well, thanks so much for spending time talking about this important report, Alka. And maybe you can leave our listeners with the web address so they can find more information about and download a copy of the report or the summary.
Absolutely. It's detaineetaskforce.org, and you can also reach it through the Constitution Project's website at constitutionproject.org.
Okay, detaineetaskforce.org or constitutionproject.org. Alka, it's mm-hmm. been a pleasure. Thanks so much for speaking with us tonight.
Not at all. Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
That's Alka Pradhan. She was counsel to the Constitution Project's Bipartisan Task Force on Detainee Treatment about U.S. torture of detainees during their two-year investigation. The report released last week. Again, detaineetaskforce.org or constitutionproject.org.